evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, January 11, 2021. South Sudan's military plane crash in Lake State.
Some people just had some scratches on the body, so that was regarded as minor injuries. About 11 were admitted to the hospital in Chebet and given some first aid.
And some South Sudanese are calling for disarmament in Tonch County.
The possession of the gun made everybody, and because the land has become lawless, anybody who has the gun in his hand, he would claim the law by himself. He could just anything, anybody passing by is killed.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A military chopper crashed in Chuabet County of Lake State on Sunday. A doctor in Chuabet Civil Hospital says two out of the 11 passengers are being treated for severe internal injuries. An eyewitness said the chopper's propeller broke off when the helicopter was descending at Chuabet airstrip. For VOA News, William Mabor Sunday reports from Rumbek.
A MI-17 chopper, which was carrying the body of the late Gabriel Matur Malek, a former lawmaker and a leader of GOG community living in Juba, crashed in Chuabet town of Lake State yesterday afternoon. Dr. Andrea Majot Kachwal, administrator at Chuabet Civil Hospital, says 11 passengers were brought into his facility with minor injuries.
Some people just had some scratches on the body, so that was regarded as minor injuries. About 11 were admitted to the hospital in Chuabet and given some first aid.
John Chedut, an eyewitness in Chuabet County, says he saw the helicopter's propeller fall off. He said the chopper sound changed instantly and it crashed to the ground.
Actually, what happened yesterday, it was that the helicopter came from Juba, and when reaching to the football ground of Chuabet Girls Primary School, immediately it got crashed. The helicopter was actually carrying 14 passengers, and 11 passengers are injured. And according to the pilot, he told me that the helicopter was having a technical problem.
Joel Abram, the pilot in charge of the helicopter, says the crash was due to technical error, which made him lose the direction.
We are thankful that we are surviving to tell the story. What happened was we had a technical failure in the aircraft systems, especially in the transmission system. As we were coming in to land, we got the warning, and so we tried to come in and land, but we lost directional control. So we did our best to save ourselves and the passengers.
Lieutenant General Garang Mabil, one of the survivors, says as the chauffeur descended, it developed problems.
We actually traveled from Juba yesterday. We left Juba around 11:30. And we came to Chuabet exactly at 1:30. While we were trying to land, we fall into a problem, so a mechanical problem, and our pilot actually have a good analysis of the situation, how the plane failed to land safely. So while we were landing, we got some problem with mechanical problem, and the pilot tried to control the plane, but it was unfortunate. We really crashed at the football square, and from there, the situation was a little bit dangerous, and actually, by the help of Almighty God, all of us survive.
Achui Marob Gwili, the aviation director at Rumbek Airstrip, says the helicopter was carrying 13 passengers, 3 crew members, and the body of the late Malek, a veteran politician who died in Juba after a long illness. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabor, reporting in Rumbek Lake State.
Some elite from the three counties of Tonch in Warap State who live in Juba say civilians must be disarmed and competent courts must be established to restore lasting peace in the area. Coach Denkoch, a leader of the Luajang community in Juba, says the government should disarm warring communities and start a program to heal affected families. Some local leaders say communal violence continues in the area. For VOA News, Daniel Marengwek reports from Juba.
Between August and December last year, at least 180 people were killed in intercommunal violence in Tony East County, and another 20 people were killed in Tony North County. Local authorities say fighting continues between the communities of Tony East and Tony North counties in an area where no mobile phone network exists. Some Juba-based elites from Tony worry the situation could escalate if measures are not taken to end the violence. Coach Deng Coach, a leader of the Luanjang community who lives in Juba, says the government should disarm civilians in rival communities and start a program to heal communities affected by the violence. He also says authorities should arrest and punish perpetrators of violence to deter the persistent.
The possession of the gun made everybody, and because the land has become lawless, anybody who have the gun in his hand, he would claim the law by himself. He could just anything. Anybody passing by is killed. There were human posts we were just put on the way. A man would stand with his pickup or any clunch, and you first, you pay 5,000. Disarmament was well arranged. And if done at the right time, in the right places, such that another person would not say that it is my section, he is being targeted alone.
Coach denies allegations circulating on social media that some elites from Tony North, East and South counties encourage their communities to fight. Edward Cholmum, a student at the University of Juba, who hails from Tony South County, says intercommunal violence in the Tony area is politically motivated by the people who live there.
The root cause of the problem is also here in the town. We have some of the youth which have the little resources, and we have some of the elders which are here in the town. Those elders mostly used to fuel the conflict back home because they simply know that no one will even die among them. Let government deal with those in the town. Those in the town will simply call upon those whom they mostly inside to stop what is going on back home.
Mum is calling on the government to forcefully disarm Tony civilians. Philip Aguirre-Panyang, assistant professor at the Institute of Peace, Development, Security and Strategic Studies at the University of Juba, says most sectoral conflicts in South Sudan are politicized by people living in the towns. Aguirre says a weak justice system, insufficient law enforcement, and the proliferation of firearms among civilians are the drivers of intercommunal violence.
If you disarm all these communities, so we have to train this force so that the communities know that there is a protection for them. This will motivate them to hand over their guns, because these guns are used for the sake of protection. That is not being provided by the government, because we don't have the manpower, we don't have the police, we don't have even adequate presence of the army that can protect these communities. Because if the communities are isolated, there's no roads, they don't know what is happening on the other side of the bush. So I believe peace is connected with development.
Fanyang, the former governor of Jonglei State, says peace can be achieved by gradually transforming communities. He says the government should provide skills training to youth or integrate them into the police or army. Fanyang, Kuch and Mum said they worry that the situation in Tonj could quickly spiral out of control if signatories to the revitalized peace deal continue to delay forming state governments. Minister of Information Michael Makwey declined to say what the national government was doing to end persistent intercommunal conflicts in Tony and other parts of the country.
Intercommunal conflict has nothing to do with the UCRM formation. You ask the security organ.
Despite several peace and reconciliation initiatives organized in the three Tony counties between March and June 2020, deadly intercommunal continues. For BOA News, Daniel Marengwek in Juba.
Some residents of Bor in Jonglei State say getting clean drinking water is a struggle after a water station supplying the town broke down months ago. Some of the residents of the town claim only one borehole works in the area, which is always crowded. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
27-year-old Bor resident Abung Aringa Jack says there is only one functional borehole in the block 2 residential area where she resides, and that area is always crowded since Bor Water Station stopped operating in October. She says many residents have resorted to fetching water directly from the River Nile.
You go to the borehole and wait in the queue until evening. If you think you cannot manage, then the option is to go back home to sleep without drinking water, or you go to the river. Okay, what can we do? And the taps are not working.
40-year-old Bor resident Mary Nyantwar says she knows drinking water taken directly from the Nile can cause waterborne diseases, but she has no other choice these days.
We, especially the women, are suffering because of this water crisis. Getting water for home consumption now has become an issue of concern. The options are either you stay in the queue, waiting for almost the whole day to fill your one or two jerry can from the borehole, or you go fetch directly from the river. I appeal to the government, let them please solve this issue as soon as possible.
Rachel Adiu, resident of Block 7, says she travels every day from Block 7 to Block 3 to fetch a borehole water for home use. Adiu says the borehole in Block 3 is always congested and she is tired of fighting over water every day.
The issue of drinking water is a problem. You see people wrestling at night and during the daytime at the boreholes. Most boreholes are not functioning now, and there are a lot of people in the town. There are those who came from the village and those who were here. A woman asked to leave a baby on the bed to go and wait in the queue to fetch water at night. This is the great suffering indeed.
Jacob Ajang, a resident of Block 6, says he too has been affected by lack of access to clean water.
The water I've got is cursed. There is no water completely. We are just depending on some pure borehole which are in the dry places. And the population has increased greatly. So it's hard to get water for drinking, and when you say I will depend on mineral water, then the cost of the water also won't be very high on your side as individual.
Ajang says men like him are now bathing in the river, which he says is risky due to crocodiles and other dangerous animals lurking in the river. Emmanuel Taban with the NGO Polish Humanitarian Action coordinates NGOs providing services in the water, sanitation and hygiene cluster in Jonglei State. Taban says most boreholes, especially in flood-affected areas, have sunk and are no longer operational.
We are aware that there is a lot of issues related to water, clean water around the town. No, the year has just begun. I've just started work today. Anyway, thanks for the update. We'll also keep you updated.
Bor Water Station Manager Moses Mayul says the station stopped operations in early October after water pumping machines became submerged in flood waters. He says his group is working to fix broken pipes and pumping machines as the water slowly recedes.
The water damaged some parts of the pumping machines, but now the water has receded and we have started fixing them. I am now in Juba looking for spare parts. Once I get them, I will go back and hopefully we'll resume our operation.
John McQueen Alier, a deputy director of the Public Health Department at the Bor Municipal Council, says people could contract life-threatening diseases if they drink untreated water from the Nile.
When you go to the river, you can get the water. Diseases like Kalazar, Bilharzia, typhoid, and other things, they will come from that water. So we need the clean water. That tablet is good. When you go to the riverside now here, you can collect the water and you put that tablet. Now the water is clean. And they are very good than the borehole water. So make sure, my people, I'm now requesting you about the issue of the water from the river. Don't drink direct. You put the tablet pass and you will drink like that. So that is my message to my people.
An estimated 842,000 people die each year globally from diarrhea as a result of drinking unsafe water or poor sanitation and hygiene, according to the World Health Organization. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at preparations for elections in Uganda. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best way to introduce change?
You have to educate. Education is the key factor to change. Without education, people will resist.
You have to educate the person, but you have to educate people on the situation on ground, the implication of that situation, and if the change is to come in, what impact is that change going to create?
So the best way to introduce change is to understand the change, and you try to educate the people on what change is all about.
I think just go right ahead and do it, because there are always people who don't really like change, and there are also always people who like change and they're conducive to change. And so I think there's always going to be that one person who's like, no, I don't like this, it's different.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. It is just a couple of days before Ugandans go to polls to elect a new president on January 14. The elections comes amid calls for rejecting violence, hate speech and inflammatory statements. Facebook has blocked accounts of the Ministry of Information, citing cases of manipulation and multiple accounts created to spread false news. The lead-up to Uganda's national election has been marred by increasing violence, numerous human rights violations and restrictions imposed on the opposition candidates and others. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The lead-up to Uganda's national elections has been marred by increasing violence, numerous human rights violations, and restrictions imposed on opposition candidates and supporters. Spokeswoman for the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Ravina Shamdasani, says the deteriorating human rights situation in the country is likely to discourage people from voting. This, she says, raises the prospect of continued unrest after the election.
Numerous human rights violations have been reported, including of the rights to freedom of expression, peaceful assembly and participation, as well as arbitrary deprivation of life, arbitrary arrest and detention, and torture. Indeed, harassment, ill-treatment, arbitrary arrests and detention of opposition candidates and supporters have been worrying developments during the electoral campaign.
In mid-November, the arrest and detention of two opposition presidential candidates, Bobi Wine and Patrick Oboy Amuriat, and members of the political opposition triggered riots and protests across the country. At least 54 people were killed. Shamdasani says several presidential directives on COVID-19 have been issued since March, purportedly on health grounds. She notes Uganda's Electoral Commission issued a new decree in June. It prohibits mass rallies during the election campaigns, suggesting digital electoral campaigns instead.
Human rights law, under certain circumstances, may allow for restrictions to mass gatherings and physical campaigning for public health reasons. However, we've increasingly observed that the COVID-19 restrictions have been enforced more strictly to curtail opposition electoral campaign activities in a discriminatory fashion.
The UN Human Rights Office is calling on the Ugandan authorities to protect people's rights to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly. It is urging them to take measures to prevent electoral violence and to guarantee the rights of people to participate freely and peacefully in the election process. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
More than 200 foreign workers, mostly Chinese, have fled post-election violence in the Central African Republic to Cameroon's eastern town of Garo. The foreign workers say they are being targeted by rebel groups disgruntled with Central African Republic's December 27 presidential elections that saw incumbent President Faustin elected. For VOA News, Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
34-year-old Li Yu calls himself a spokesman for Chinese workers who fled post-election violence in the Central African Republic CAR to Cameroon. Speaking through a translator, he says 152 Chinese merchants, construction engineers, and those working on mining sites escaped to Cameroon in the past week. Li says armed rebel groups began threatening Chinese mining workers after the December 27 elections in the CAR. He says the situation worsened during the first week of January when groups of heavily armed men started searching their homes, looting, and asking all Chinese citizens to leave or be killed. Li says he is happy that Cameroon is hospitable to them. Li says more than 60 of the Chinese were working on mining sites in the CAR and some of them trekked through the bush for days before arriving in Cameroon. He says some Chinese and other foreign workers were assisted to the border by the Central African Republic's military. Cameroon authorities say over 250 foreign workers in the CAR had crossed over to Cameroon within the past week. Cameroon Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji visited the fleeing workers Sunday in Garoua Bulaï. Nji says Cameroon's President Paul Biya dispatched him to the border to ensure their safety and to provide aid.
Le président de la République a demandé qu'on vous accorde l'encadrement nécessaire pendant ce moment.
He says Biya asked him to make sure that all foreign workers escaping the violent clashes in the CAR are safe in Cameroon, especially the Chinese. He says the mattresses, food, and first aid products they are handing out are from Biya to help the fleeing workers in Garoua Bulaï. He says Cameroon's military will help transport Chinese citizens who want to go to their embassy in the capital Yaoundé. Nji says 4,500 civilians have fled election-related violence in the CAR to Garoua Bulaï since December. He says the violence has also blocked close to 2,000 trucks at Garoua Bulaï trying to get from Cameroon's coastal city of Douala to the CAR's capital, Bangui. The United Nations peacekeeping mission in the Central African Republic, MINUSCA, on Sunday said violence was rising to an alarming extent. MINUSCA said 4,000 civilians in the CAR towns of Boua and Grimari fled heavy fighting between rebels and troops to safety in Boua's Roman Catholic Church. Cameroon's Chief of Defense Staff, Lieutenant General René Claude Meka, last week visited Garoua Bulaï. Speaking Sunday, he said Cameroon's intelligence indicated that CAR rebels were moving towards the border.
Nous sommes venus ici pour nous rassurer auprès de responsables.
Meka says he visited Cameroon's eastern border with the CAR to ensure that troops strictly apply measures to protect civilians from the disorder in the CAR. He says he is happy that the military is keeping Cameroon's side of the border safe by making sure that rebels and weapons do not infiltrate into Cameroon. Violence flared in the CAR over the December 27 presidential election, which saw Faustin Archange Touadéra re-elected with more than 53% of the votes. The CAR accuses former President François Bozizé, whose candidacy for the presidential election was rejected, of attempting a coup. He denies organizing December rebel attacks, which were repelled by UN troops. Bozizé's opposition coalition demanded the election be postponed due to the violence, but the government went ahead with the polls. Violence between armed groups since 2013 has displaced nearly 700,000 people inside the Central African Republic and forced over 600,000 to flee, most to neighboring Cameroon, Chad, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Garba Bulai, Cameroon.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with Amir Diab with the song I'll Be It Manna. Listening to Amr Diab with the song Elvi Itmanna. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for your company this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.